Hello and welcome to Keeping Afloat, episode 15. This is a special episode, and we're going to be following a little bit of a different structure than usual, because I'm going to tell you what it was like to be aboard my ship as a crew member during the COVID-19 pandemic for 6 weeks. And it was actually nothing like you would expect. Now, in case we haven't met yet, I'm Kabir, and I'm a cruise director. I work as a senior officer on a cruise ship, overseeing all of the entertainment and hosting the cruise. From theater shows to dance classes and parties, I oversee a massive team of incredibly talented entertainers while traveling around the world. And now you get to come with me. This is the story of my life at sea and just trying to keep afloat. Remember to check out my real life up-to-date Instagram at Cruise Director Kabir and www.cruisedirectorkabir.com. Just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed in the show are mine and not that of any brand that I'm associated with. And with that, let's cast off. Now let me be clear about something from the get-go. I'm not telling this story to spark rumors or fear or to criticize any one person or any company. I'm telling you this story because it was interesting living in something that was so actively being reported to the rest of the world. I was watching reports of other cruise ships, reading articles about other ships dealing with COVID-19 on board. And I think there were a lot of misconceptions that the media had, a lot of misreporting as to what it was actually like on the ship. So I wanted to address a lot of that through this story and how mine was a bit of a contrast, but there were also similarities. Now, in order to tell you how all of this got started, let's travel back in time to the very first week of March. By then, we knew that it was apparent that the travel industry was going to be affected by this virus. It was looming over us. Now, on March 12th, Princess Cruises was the first to announce that they would pause operations for 60 days. That was evidence of what was going to be coming, and it was also followed by Holland America, Seabourn, Carnival Corporation itself, Norwegian Cruise Line, and then Royal Caribbean and Celebrity Cruises. I was supposed to leave my contract, leave the ship, be finished, be home by March 15th. That was my departure date. I had my flight booked and everything. My replacement was due to fly out of the UK on the same day, so we would kind of just swap places. There wouldn't have been a handover or anything, but he was the resident cruise director, so he knew what was going on. On the morning of the 14th of March at 8 o'clock a.m., the captain came on the public address system and said that due to COVID-19, we would not be boarding any new guests the following day. However, guests that were currently on board and had a second week booked would be remaining on board. Now, this put two questions into my mind. Was my replacement going to come now that all of the guests that were going to be flying out weren't going to be on that flight? And would crew be allowed to disembark the ship? I called my company, and they asked me to stay on the ship for another week, just in the event that my replacement doesn't come. And if he did come, then just basically enjoy the week that I had. That evening, I went to the bridge, and I usually make an announcement with the captain before we set sail. When I was up there, they were working on a revised itinerary for the following week because the ports were dropping like flies. Things were closing left, right, and center. Scheduling became an issue. And at this point, almost half of the cruise industry was on a pause in operations. So by this point, I thought we were one of the only ships operating. As far as I knew, we had a now confirmed revised itinerary that we'd be following for next week's cruise. The following morning was March 15th. My replacement did get on the flight out. There were just a few people heading to resorts in our home port. And this was still early on as everything was developing, so things hadn't really closed just yet. But by the afternoon, he was on the ship, I handed over the reins, and I swapped my flight to be for the following week on March 22nd. Air Canada was offering free changes based on the situation, and to be honest with you, it was fantastic. It was so easy to just go into the app and change a flight. Now that evening, as we set sail, the captain came on the public address system, and just around the time that we just pushed off the pier, had said that due to the current situation, every single one of the ports that we were supposed to dock at on that cruise were closed, and we've been told to stay around our home port, and we're going to have to take it as it comes. That created a lot of uncertainty, but at the same time, reflected the situation that was unfolding as quickly as it was. Now, the next day, we literally docked back in our home port and let the guests off to explore the island that they had flown into the day before. There was also a small group of ships that used our home port as their home port, and most of them were around as well. And even then, we were getting ships coming in from other places because their ports had closed as well. We were sailing in and out of our home port every night. And the reason for that was because in the evenings we'd have to get a certain distance away from the port in order to do our discharges, so our wastewater, which by the way is heavily treated. It's actually drinkable water, but we can't really keep it on board. And then in turn we'd generate fresh water overnight and arrive back in the morning. On the ship, at that point, we had strict protocols imposing social distancing, and eventually, we actually stopped all of our entertainment, basically over the span of maybe a few hours. Production shows were stopped, onboard activities, meetings of any sort, restaurant reservations, everything was suspended. By Wednesday, the 18th of March, we'd become pretty sensitive to flu-like symptoms on board, and we started putting people into isolation right away. Now, that number grew exponentially, but not just because we had flu-like symptoms, but also because if we have four people to a room, which some of our crew members do share four to a room, if one person had symptoms, everybody was automatically isolated, and therefore, our numbers skyrocketed very, very quickly. Well, later on that day, the captain came on and said that all shore leave for passengers and crew for the whole ship was to be ceased immediately, as the home port had its first case. That night, I stood on my balcony and I watched the port authorities bring on board five COVID testing kits. And shortly thereafter, the captain came on the public address system. In fact, it was the following morning and our fate was sealed. We had confirmed cases of coronavirus on board. No port would be taking us, and even if a port did take us, the chances they would allow shore leave of any sort was very, very low. Now, for the guests and myself that were supposed to fly home on March 22nd, I mean, at this point, it would be very, very easy to assume that that was not going to happen, and it didn't. Homeport denied our ship docking on the 22nd. The flight was canceled. I just canceled my flight altogether because the chances of me getting home were pretty low. And what followed was actually a very high-level government discussion between our cruise line and the government of the UK. Most of our guests were British at the time, and they had to specifically organize a repatriation mission to get these guests home. Now, originally, the plan was for them to go home on the following Tuesday, so 2 days from their original departure time. At this point, the ship was basically just floating next to our home port, and we actually had four citizens of the home port on the ship. Now, initially, the authorities did not allow them to disembark the ship and go home, despite them being citizens of the country. Now, that actually led to a really interesting situation. They happened to work for my department. They were the party band on the ship. And one of their mothers was the best friend of the prime minister. And so the mom got in touch with the prime minister and basically said, you know, my son is on this ship. And so by order of the prime minister of the country, the ship was ordered to send one of its tender boats that morning with the band on it. And so they disembarked that day. Now, later on, the captain came on the public address system and told us that it would be Wednesday before we'd be able to dock and disembark the passengers. I just went ahead and canceled my flight altogether. Now, the following day, we were informed that the guests would actually be leaving that night. Now, that was a huge turn. So obviously, the guests had to pack, get ready to go, but for the most part, they were relieved. There were going to be flights to two different cities in the UK, but here's the twist. They had to tell the guests very creatively that they could not take their bags with them. Now, this was for two reasons. One was the company didn't have the resources at the airport in order to get the bags on the plane. Because there was just such a low frequency of flights, they had laid off a number of people. In addition, there was a really high risk to taking bags from an infected ship that frankly could have the virus living on it and cause a widespread issue. So they were asked to leave their bags on the ship, and eventually the bags would have to be taken home from the ship. The ship would have to go to the UK eventually. Now, I settled in at that point for the long haul because there was no way I was getting home anytime soon. And that was okay. There was nothing else really to do other than just accept what was coming to you and stay in that positive mindset. But that was just the start of it. It was just crew on board. Or so I thought, until we were reminded to continue all of our uniforms and name tag practices, because we still had 50 guests on board that were in isolation. Now, these guests couldn't go on the main flight home because they needed to complete 14 days under observation and make sure they were symptom-free. Now, the thing is, as well, a lot of guests, well, very few guests, actually have one person to a cabin. So chances are about 25 to 27 guests actually had symptoms, while the rest of the people in isolation were just their cabin mates, their partners, their friends they were traveling with. Now, the medical team at this point was really busy, and we did get people to help. Another little story that happened was there was a doctor that came on board, a Mexican doctor, and he was asked if he had been to any of the infected countries or traveled anywhere that was harmful or had cases. And he, of course, answered no. Now, as we inspected his passport about an hour later, it turned out that he was in Italy 2 weeks ago. And at this point, Italy, Spain, they were the epicenter of this in the sense of having a ton of cases. Now, he had, of course, come to help with taking some pressure off of the medical team that was already on board, our doctors, our nurses, and he went straight into a 14-day isolation, didn't even see a patient. But it's important to be honest about where you've been, especially with how sensitive the situation was getting. What followed was a game of cruise ship Tetris. By this point, a ton of cruise ships had come into dock, many from other ports that were closed. But our home port said that we are open for business and willing to accommodate extra ships. At one point, there were actually 14 ships in the area of our port, with more and more coming every single day. We needed to get our isolated guests home. And that happened about 10 days later. It was a pretty intense and secretive mission, if I'm honest about it. The captain made an announcement to the entire ship and basically said that nobody can know where we're going. And social media made things a lot more difficult because people were posting information, sensitive information, about our whereabouts. And that information, because it was sent out, caused issues in the ports that we were trying to get to, because the local people didn't want the ship to come in, when really we were just trying to get people home and there would have been no contact. Now, the first example of that was when we went to Jamaica. We were originally going there to refuel, but in addition, we were going to transfer some of our UK citizens from our ship onto one of our sister ships. This way, they could get to a port and disembark them and fly them home way quicker than we could have, because we still had a mission to get these guests home. Well, because too many people posted about it, that resulted in the operation itself getting completely off track and resulted in it getting canceled in the end. It actually delayed people from getting home for over 6 weeks, just because of information being spread. And social media, I don't think that social media is a problem. I just think that in a critical situation like this, it didn't really help us out. But at the end of the day, everything was a learning experience, and the situation was unfolding so unbelievably quickly. We stopped in Jamaica, tried to refuel. We did refuel. They declined our request to disembark Jamaican citizens, and then we continued on. And our destination was actually unknown. The reason for this was that the Prime Minister and Home Secretary of the United Kingdom had struck a deal with Mexico and our company. It was sensitive. The UK would repatriate Mexicans back to Mexico in exchange for UK citizens to fly home through Mexico on a return flight. Any public knowledge or opposition in the port that we were going to could mean that we'd be denied on arrival, and then everybody would be stranded. The social media storm continued to grow. Parents of crew members took to social media and started a campaign saying, quote unquote, "Our kids are being held on board like prisoners and not allowed to leave." They used terms like stranded and helpless. And if I'm being completely honest, these terms are completely unfounded. Yes, you're on a ship. Yes, the ship itself is in the ocean. But on that ship, there are a ton of resources. First of all, you've got the weather on your side. You've got the beautiful Caribbean sun, the heat, the warmth. You've got the ability to walk around the ship, to stretch your legs, and you have food brought to you. In addition to that, the food was actually really good. And it was quite upsetting to me to see people using terms like this so early on in the situation. And it actually really hurt getting people home. It hurt the chances of repatriation, and it didn't help in anything. However, everybody has a right to express how they feel. But when people do that, I just wish that in that situation, people had the correct information, because it would have actually helped get people home sooner. Now, the ship arrived in Progreso, Mexico, on the 30th of March. We kind of figured out that's where we were headed right after we got into the Gulf. Now, it was too rough to dock, of course, another curveball, so we anchored off the coast just about 1 nautical mile off. This way I could still get cell signal, and I was pretty happy about that. The following evening, I assisted with the disembarkation of all of the remaining guests, in addition to a couple of medical disembarkations. One was a passenger that was headed home, but also needed to go to the hospital first in order to receive medical care, and there was also a crew member that needed to be taken to hospital. After all of that was done, we departed very quickly. Our destination? East. Initially, it looked like we were headed for Cuba, but very quickly, we figured out that was not the case, and we passed it. We went past the Florida Keys and were just off the coast of Florida when we actually stopped altogether. And I remember it was a beautiful calm day, flat. The ocean was completely flat. It was like a mirror. We were just north of Nassau, Bahamas. And then we set out on a transatlantic, going 12 knots, which by the way is pretty slow. Usually ships go about 20 knots. We started to make our way east. I managed to confirm at that point that we were definitely headed for Lisbon. However, everything was changing minute by minute. I also found out why we had stopped. The reason for it was there was a crew member that was really ill. He was having issues with breathing and a couple of other things. So we requested medical assistance from the United States. They were going to send out a helicopter to medically evacuate someone. Well, they denied our medical request, as did the Bahamas, and we were forced to carry on. But I'd also just like to point out that we have a full-fledged medical team on board. We've got doctors, nurses, a surgical suite if we need, but there's specific things that medical teams on land can do and the resources that they have that we just can't do, and we needed their help. And there was nothing else we could do. We had to keep going. At this point, we had about 160 people in isolation, with more being released every single day. The good thing was that our new cases went down dramatically, and eventually we were just releasing people, with maybe one or two new cases every day, so it was a good position to be in. The mood on board was relatively positive, people were keeping their spirits up, walking around on deck, and of course, very socially distanced. Now, in addition to that, the ship was as clean as could be. Many crew members, especially the ones on deck 2, that were 4 to a room and didn't have any sort of windows, were given guest cabins, usually an ocean view or a balcony. Now, I was extremely lucky to be in a mini suite. It was such a blessing. I had a tub, and I did as much as I could to make it my home. Now, around the beginning of April, I also had a horrendous cold, and based on my loss of taste and smell, I thought it was COVID, and according to the medical team, they did too. I was isolated, I consulted, of course, all the medical team just about every few hours, and I was through the worst of it in about 3 days or so. It was like the worst cold I had ever had. However, I had been taking vitamin C pills, working out every day, and when I did get the symptoms eventually, I slept pretty much for 3 days straight. I broke my fever, and my system managed to beat it in total in about 4 full days. I was still isolated, and I can't confirm that I had it, but chances are that I could have had COVID. And it just showed me that every single person has different symptoms and is dealing with it differently. But in addition to that, I found out this whole thing on the ship about being on board, it was a mindset thing. There was nothing else you could do in terms of getting off the ship, going anywhere, going for a walk outside, that you had to entertain yourself. Staying positive was the name of the game. And not feeding into negative social media was also a big, big thing. By this point, we were moving in to the first week of April, and the weather was about to take a massive turn in the North Atlantic. The seas went from being absolutely smooth and calm in the Caribbean to 20, 25 foot seas in the North Atlantic. But in the end, I actually developed my sea legs through this whole thing because I'll admit, I was not nauseous once. But still, changes were about to come. At this point, we were heading in to just about the second week of April. Initially, a lot of cruise lines had disembarked all of their guests, leaving the ship full of crew members to go and party and just absolutely run amok and have a great time. I saw a ton of my friends doing that online, and by this point, all of that fun was over. There were strict regulations in place, and yeah, a lot of ships had cases of COVID. That was bound to happen with people in close contact. However, I will say, the response of all of the cruise lines and the ships to nip it in the bud and to give the best care possible to their crew members was incredible. I saw cruise lines being so incredibly compassionate and trying to make sure that their mental health was taken care of as well. They did that by making sure the food quality stayed up, by making sure that they were in nice cabins. And for a lot of crew members, going into a guest cabin was something that they would never do, something that a lot of them could never even see. So to have the opportunity to live like a guest, to be able to go outside, to be able to have that quality of food and comfort, was really, really nice. Now, our captain was extremely reluctant to put us into a full quarantine. By this point, our case numbers had plummeted to about 50 or so crew under isolation, and everyone else was on the mend. Still, we had the social distancing guidelines on board, which I'll admit, not every single person was good at following. As a result, measures did get a little bit stricter, and it was kind of on the onus of the rest of the crew to point out when somebody wasn't following it. Reluctantly, just around the second week of April, we had to go in to a full ship quarantine. And I could hear it in the captain's voice when he made the announcement. He did not want to do that. I knew him quite well because I work very closely with him. And in his words, the mental health of his crew was in jeopardy. At that point, they put anyone that was in a shared room or had a cabin on lower decks into guest cabins that had access to the outside, including balconies and ocean views, which was a really, really nice thing to do. This quarantine was going to be the hardest on two departments, housekeeping and food and beverage. The food and beverage team had to bring us 3 meals a day. Breakfast was at 7 a.m., lunch was at noon, and dinner was around 6 p.m. They had multiple options, especially for lunch, and they did accommodate vegetarians and gluten-free really, really well. The only thing was, the only hot meal was lunch. But hey, it's a global pandemic, you're on a ship, what else could you do? There were so many other things to focus on, and at that point, I was just thankful to the teams that were putting their health at risk by trying to bring us food. Now, this was not an ideal circumstance, but it was, again, all a mindset thing. They're trying to accommodate 700 people, and those teams that did all of that, our housekeeping teams, the food and beverage teams, they were incredible, and not once did they complain, and they smiled and greeted every single crew member down my corridor. It was actually really nice to see crew helping other crew. We arrived off the coast of the UK by April 17th or so, just off the coast of the Isle of Wight. Now, initially, the plan was for us to dock on the 20th of April in Southampton. We disembark all remaining crew and, depending on nationality, get them a flight. If there weren't flights, we could either charter a plane or they would just have to stay on the ship for now. Now, I was planned to disembark on the 21st because the ship would be staying alongside for a couple of days. So I booked my flight for the 21st to fly home from London Heathrow, finally. Until we figured out that we would not be docking. As we were waiting just off the coast of the UK, there were a few of our sister ships around us. Now, one of those sister ships was scheduled to dock directly after us in the same berth in Southampton. But it turns out that her water filtration system wasn't working, and she was critically low on water and unable to generate it. Now, the water system on cruise ships is a little bit interesting. Some ships have separate tanks for drinking water and ballast tanks. This ship was a lot older, so it used that drinking water as ballast water. Basically water that you can move around in tanks to rebalance the ship, usually on the port and starboard sides, and sometimes to help weigh it down in heavy weather. Now, if the ship didn't fill its ballast tanks or was unable to utilize them, it didn't have access to a critical means of stabilization. So what they did was they swapped around our ship and our sister ship. So the ship I was on would be docking on the 22nd, and anyone that had flights before that was required to transfer to our sister ship. We had a few hours' notice to get packed and ready to go by 4 p.m. Now, a lot of people were caught off guard by this, and the party was over. I mean, I wasn't going to get my beautiful suite again, and I was leaving a couple of dear friends behind, but at the same time, I was getting ready to go home. I'd be home in 48 hours. I loved my ship so, so, so much. And for me, it was home. So having to leave it so quickly, I kind of didn't feel prepared to say goodbye, but at the same time, I had to get a grip. There were much bigger things happening than my love for my ship that I was on. So we ended up transferring to our sister ship on the 19th of April. And on the 20th, she docked in Southampton. Now, just like to point out, the sister ship was nothing like my ship. She was a lot older, and the water wasn't on when we got on board. It was on very selectively, and it wasn't fully turned on until we docked in Southampton. And I helped my friends down the gangway on the 20th as we docked. A lot of UK citizens disembarked that day. Now, what I was allowed to do was walk down the gangway to help someone with their bags, and then I'd have to walk all the way back up. I wasn't allowed to go any further than that, but it meant that I could touch land, so I did. I helped a number of friends off the gangway, And it was just interesting. It was a bit of a novelty, just touch the ground and go back. I mean, for me, it wasn't a massive thing because I love being on board. But for some people, they burst into tears when they got to the bottom of the gangway. They were emotional. Some of them were just unfazed. I flew home the next day on the 21st of April. Going into London Heathrow Airport during this whole thing, now that was an experience. There was nobody. There was no line to check in. There's nobody around. I kind of just walked up to the counter and my initial thought was, oh, my bags are all overweight. I've got 3 extremely overweight suitcases and I don't want to have to pay for every single one being overweight. So Air Canada was actually extremely kind. They didn't charge me for any of my bags and I just said I was a seafarer and they immediately just said, don't worry about it. So thank you very much, Air Canada. If you're listening, I love you. This is why you're my favorite airline. I walked to the gate a little bit early because I just wanted to sit there and look at the airplanes. And when I got to the section of the airport that my flight would be departing from, there was not one person in that area of the airport. Like, nobody. I don't know if anybody has seen the movie Warm Bodies. It's about zombies that kind of inhabit an airport and this love story between a zombie and a real person. Anyway, it was as empty as some of the scenes in that movie. Pin drop silent. And nobody showed up to the gate until about 30 minutes before our departure time. The plane itself had 50 people on it when our capacity was well over that, probably closer to 250. The flight attendants wore masks the whole flight, as well as these kind of protective layers that they wore over their uniforms. And we were asked to keep our masks on for the entire flight as well. There was no alcohol, just boxed meals, which were really good, and bottled water. But at the end of the day, they got me home. And it was surreal to land on Canadian soil. I felt extremely patriotic. Extremely proud to be Canadian. And yeah, I cried a little bit when I landed. But in a global pandemic, I think being home, there's something to be said for it. You know where you belong. And when things like this happen, it was just nice to know that I was so close to home and so close to my family. That was pretty much my story. But here are some tidbits that I wanted to mention and also some doses of reality. Now, the situation on board, while it unfolded really quickly, was completely under control. Crew were actually really good about it. And it was important to just be in the right mindset. You had to get a grip. Otherwise, I think the gravity of it could take you away a little bit. The virus was definitely brought onto the ship by someone, and there was not a high number of crew movement. A lot of this was transferred from people coming on and off the ship frequently. At no point was the situation on board dire or distressing. We were given the necessary information at the right time, and I understand why things needed to be withheld. The food on board was really good. It wasn't at all like jail, just a little bit dry at times, but at the end of the day, what can you do? For me, the biggest thing that kept me sane was being physical and working out every single day, even in the slightest, just doing some push-ups or being on the balcony and listening to some music and honestly just dancing around. I do that. I'll admit it. It happens. And I was really, really, really lucky and grateful. I had a beautiful balcony that I could be out on, and that was incredible. Now, the industry itself, the cruise industry, the travel industry, it's going to recover. And yeah, there are going to be changes. We're going to have to make sure that things aren't as packed in as they once were. But I fully anticipate getting out to sea very, very soon in the coming months. And I can't wait to book a cruise and to go back to work. But the most important thing I wanted to mention was that the crew of my ship, from the captain to the galley stewards, every single person worked hard to make sure that we took care of each other. Everybody just tried to do their best. We banded together and we really helped keep each other mentally and physically okay. It was beautiful. Now, I'm home now. I'm just sitting in my house and looking out at the street. It's sunset right now. and I'm so thankful to be here. But any time that you see an article that's about the cruise industry, about travel, about anything, make sure you check the sources, because I saw a lot of misreporting as to what was actually happening on cruise ships during this pandemic. For the most part, it was a mindset. Stay positive and enjoy where you are, because everything is changing so quickly that you just don't know how things are going to unfold. But at the end of the day, to all of the crew members that are still on ships, or maybe you're home with your families, we did an amazing job. We were resilient, and I am so excited to get back out there and cruise again soon. And if you've cruised with me, or maybe you haven't cruised with me, I hope to see you on one of my ships, or any ship for that matter, really, really soon. I have no doubt that we're going to go right back into operation very soon, with some changes, of course, to help make things a little bit healthier on board. But it will happen, and it'll happen at the right time. Wherever you may be listening to this episode, I wish you continued health, and I hope to see you out on the seven seas once again. I'm Cruise Director Kabir, and this was Keeping Afloat, COVID-19 edition. Talk to you soon.